I became a wild food forager from an age of around about 14, 15, when me and a mate were running around the house causing riot. And his dad used to watch a lot of things like Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall and River Cottage and all that sort of stuff. And he got really annoyed at us and kicked us out of the house and said, go to the woods and look for some mushrooms. So we did, quite reluctantly. And we suddenly decided that the mushrooms we were seeing, there were purple ones, big ones, round ones, smelly ones, yellow ones, black ones, all sorts of different colours and rays. And we got really interested. And then we came back to the house, couldn't ID a single thing. But every single year after that, we went to the same forest and looked for mushrooms. And over the years, it got better and better.
Can you tell me the sorts of things that you found around Acorn Bank?
Yep, we found a lot of common things, things that you'd expect to find everywhere. So common sorrel, wood sorrel. So, you know, these are plants that you would expect to find in most areas. A lot of things like hogweed, common hogweed, chervil, pignuts. These are things that you should expect to find in lots of areas.
What particularly do you find down in the river, right near the river?
Yeah, we find a lot of meadow sweet, definitely wild garlic. You could probably supply all of Penrith with wild garlic. So yeah, wild garlic, meadow sweet, bistort, hedge wound wort, which is like a member of the mint family. Yeah, it absolutely stinks. It's not like a nice mint, like your spearmint or anything like that. It's horrendous, but apparently will heal broken bones.
What's the best time of year, do you think, around Acorn Bank?
Absolutely May time. Yeah, May and June. So, like, March and April is when things are just on the up and they're starting to come up and you're starting to see them come through. But it's really when everything goes boom in May and June and all the flowers start to come out and the wild garlic's in the air just before the heat kind of puts things away, and things after they've flowered they tend to go a little bit wooden and tough and fibrous, but there's like a period between the end of April and mid-June where everything's just perfect.
And you mentioned about the importance of fungi and mushrooms. Can you tell me about that?
It's vitally important. So the mushrooms, they grow in different ways. What we see above the ground or out the tree isn't really the living organism. The real living organism is what we call mycelium. It's a network, a thread network, and it's always in the soil or in the tree. So if it's a mushroom that grows out of a tree, like an oyster mushroom, it grows out the side of wood. And mycorrhizal fungi are fungi that are attached to the roots of the tree, and they can't survive without that tree. And they have this really friendly symbiotic relationship where the tree is pulling out carbon out the air and giving it to the fungus, and because it can photosynthesize, it can also supply the fungus, the real living organism, this mycelium under the soil, sugar, so it can survive. And in return, this mycelial network, which we know, the largest one we know of is around about 400 football fields big. It's this mushroom called the humongous fungus in Oregon. We know that is around about 1,000 years old, give or take. And so this mycelial network can go much further. So mushrooms have been observed taking minerals out of the rocks to give these minerals to the tree and supply the tree with extra nutrients and minerals. They'll give them nitrogen and phosphorus. So they really do help each other out.
What sort of things in the environment damage that network and that's...
Chemicals, glyphosates, nitrates, damaging the area, so killing the trees or felling them or logging them, or heavy equipment ripping up the soil, ploughing, anything like that will just ruin them completely. Because it's not just how important it is for the trees, but it's everything else around the trees. So it's the red squirrels. Squirrels eat mushrooms just as much as we do. Slugs, certain slugs. Well, most slugs, to be honest. And they, you know, it's a food source, not just for us, but for everything else. You know, so it funguses kind of prop up a lot of nature more than I think we tend to know.
Are there any species that indicate a really healthy environment?
There certainly is, yeah. And the opposite is to be said as well. There are certain species which indicate a not very healthy environment as well. So the appearance of honey fungus. If you were to see honey fungus at the base of a tree, or even near a tree, to be honest, then you know that that fungus is slowly choking that tree to death, and it will kill it over a certain period of time. So that's, you know, the opposite can be said. In terms of mushrooms and indicating whether or not an area can be good, it, particularly for grassland, which Acorn Bank has quite a bit of, if you were to find things like wax caps, they're definitely an indicator of healthy grassland, grass that hasn't been ploughed for a very long time or hasn't had nitrates or glyphosate sprayed on it. There's a thing used by ecologists called a CHEG scale, which is an acronym for CHEG, so Clavaria or Clavarioids, Hygrosibes, which are your wax caps, Entolomas and Geoglossums or Geoglossoids. Basically, if an ecologist was to find all four members or genus of mushrooms on a piece of grassland, they can guarantee that that grassland has not been touched or disturbed by humans for a minimum of 50 years, which is just something you don't see at all. So if you do find an area like that, it's worth protecting, essentially.
And can you tell me about the sorts of people that come on your courses?
We get all sorts of people. Usually, it's people that are just interested in foraging, but also just enjoy being outside, being able to reconnect with nature and to kind of open their eyes or take the blinkers off that they have. When people go for a walk, you go for a walk, you know, a walk's nice, don't get me wrong, but if you're coming back with a walk and you're also noticing certain flowers or certain mushrooms and you're able to kind of see what they are, you can read the environment a bit more as well. And being able to read the environment can kind of let you know if it's healthy or not, or if it's unhealthy. And if you're coming back home with your tea, then it's saving you money in the long run as well. It's good for your health, you know, it's good for the mind, it's good for the body and the soul, because you're outside, you're getting your vitamin D most of the time when it's not raining. So the people that come on the courses tend to be just lovely outdoorsy people that are interested in nature, like eating, you know, most people like eating, so they're a bit foodie as well. And generally just like being outdoors and reconnecting themselves to nature. We've done a really good job of putting ourselves in concrete blocks and sitting in front of a very flashy, colourful thing that, you know, is very entertaining, but after a while we all get that little itch in the back of the head that says, oh, we should probably go outside, you know. So yeah, all sorts of people really.
How do you notice that people are reconnecting with nature?
Enthusiasm. So people, you know, who start off very, very quiet, maybe a little bit timid or shy, by the end of it are chatting my head off and asking me all sorts of questions. And, you know, we sell books at the end of the courses, and they buy a book and you can see them flicking through the pages, and you can see the cogs going in the head thinking, oh, I know a good area, I might go find this, you know. And it's hopefully what it's doing is it's just... there's a little spark or a little flame inside somebody, and I've just kind of prompted it to burn brighter, essentially, and hopefully they get outdoors a bit more and reconnect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I can see it quite a lot in a lot of different people.
Mm. And how do you feel when you go out, particularly in that last springtime when you said everything's just blooming?
Lighter. I feel much lighter. When spring comes along in that period, around about May time, you know, kind of that time just after the daffodils have been and gone, and the wild garlic, you can smell the wild garlic in the air, and there's St. George's mushrooms around, and there's life, and the days are getting brighter, and it's, you just feel lighter. There's not much that can bring me down on them sort of days.
Can people of any age enjoy?
Kids are inherently really good at foraging because they haven't been taught any different, you know. As people grow up, they become a bit disconnected, and in life and society, somebody at some point has drew these kind of lines, these guidelines, you must do this and you must do that, but as a child you're completely innocent, you know. So kids are just already really good at foraging, not only because they enjoy it and they're already looking at acorns. You know, how many adults pick up an acorn and go, oh, look at this, it's an acorn, do you want to see this acorn? You know, whereas kids will do it all the time. So not only are they just looking at weird things, bugs, acorns, flowers, mushrooms, but they're also very low to the ground, so they can see a lot more than you. You know, so they make really good little foragers. And most of the time, when we're looking for mushrooms, we can't find anything. A kid will point something out, pick it up and go, well, what's this? And it'll be a porcini or a chanterelle, you know. So they're really good. One of the best things I ever found as a forager was probably a ballerina wax cap, which is an indicator species for unimproved grassland. And even on, you know, a good day where there's porcinis and hedgehog mushrooms and chanterelles around, getting to see a ballerina wax cap is, it outshines all of them because of it's not technically a rare mushroom, but it's definitely uncommon, very uncommon. And like I said, it's a good indicator that the grassland around hasn't been disturbed by humans, which is something that we're running out of because of things like nitrates and glyphosates and things like that. So definitely a ballerina wax cap, although I have had days where I've been uncontrollably laughing hysterically because there have been kilos and kilos of porcinis and chanterelles and things like that. So yeah, not every day you go out foraging you get to fill your basket up, but on the odd occasion you do.
And mushrooms have been in the news recently. They're trying to get them protected.
Absolutely.
Can you tell me a bit about that and your views on that?
The British government and the Chilean government are together trying to go to the UN so that mushrooms and fungi, though, well, the fungal kingdom, can have the same protective rights as certain plants and flowers and trees and animals do as well. So mycology is a frontier science. It's something only maybe in the last 50 years that we've started to even understand it properly. There's still a massive mountain of work to do, but we've slowly realized that mushrooms around the world, globally, the mycorrhizal mushrooms, because the trees are feeding them carbon, that carbon gets locked in the fungus, so that when the tree dies, it will release its carbon back into the atmosphere. But because it's been putting carbon into these mycelial networks in the soil, that it stores and locks them. We're not too sure for how long, but they've done a calculation, and it's calculated that globally, mycorrhizal mushrooms, they take in around about 13 gigatons of carbon each year, which is more than China's yearly output. So very important stuff.